Hello again. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 22nd of February. On February 14, Russell Shortko wrote in the New York Times, Russell wrote in a piece that was titled, How Christian Were the Founders? Last month, a week before the Senate seat of the liberal icon Edward Kennedy fell into Republican hands, his legacy suffered another blow that was probably just as damaging, if less noticed. It happened during what has become an annual spectacle in the culture wars. Over 2 days, more than 100 people, Christians, Jews, housewives, naval officers, professors, people outfitted in everything from business suits to military fatigues to turbans to baseball caps, streamed through the walls of the William Travis Building in Austin, Texas, waiting for a chance to stand before the semicircle of 15 high-backed chairs whose occupants made up the Texas Board of Education. Following the appeals from the public, the members of what is the most influential state board of education in the country and one of the most politically conservative submitted their own proposed changes to the new social studies curriculum guidelines, whose adoption was the subject of all attention. Guidelines that will affect students around the country from kindergarten to 12th grade for the next 10 years. We'll tell you what happened to Edward Kennedy and many more stories during the course of this hour with Russell Shortko. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. Russell Shortko is also the author of Descartes' Bones, A Skeletal History of the Conflict Between Faith and Reason. He is a contributing writer to the New York Times Magazine and joining us by phone today from Amsterdam. Hi, Russell.
Hi, Kathleen.
Thank you very much for being with us.
Well, thank you very much.
How is Amsterdam?
Very rainy. I just got back here this morning from New York, so I just arrived into typical Dutch weather.
Oh, Russell, you must be tired. That's a long time.
Yes, I am. I'm a little jet lagged, but that's okay. I'm used to it.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for giving us your time. This is an amazing story, to say nothing of all the characters who are involved in this. You have met a lot of characters, but just give us an overview of why it is that the Texas School Board carries so much weight when it comes to what's in our textbooks.
Yeah, well, it goes back a ways. 20, 30 years ago, Christian conservatives began putting a lot of effort into school boards, local school boards, because they realized that if you want to affect people, affect how people view society, then you should. It would be a good idea to change the kind of the information what kids learn. And Texas was kind of a beachhead, and so they began putting a lot of effort in there. So that's one reason it has a strong conservative element. Texas also is the state with the largest education fund in the country, and they use that to buy or distribute 48 million books a year. It's an enormous number, which of course gets the attention of all of the major textbook publishers. They want to please Texas. But a kind of a separate thing is, back in 1998, Texas became one of the first states to adopt broad, comprehensive guidelines on what points should be covered in American history and social studies, in economics courses, in American government, and so on. Exhaustive effort, a very inclusive effort, and it was a really good document they came up with. And so most other states modeled their guidelines on Texas's. So Texas's guidelines, which they call the TEKS, are kind of the mother of modern American textbooks.
Mm-hmm. And how many Christian conservatives are members of the Texas School Board?
There are 15 people on the board, and seven of them are a kind of self-identified block of, and they vote as a block.
Seven of them are.
Seven out of 15, so what they do is work on a given issue to pull one other member in with them.
How do you get on the school board? You're elected.
Yeah, they're elected positions.
Mm-hmm.
They don't pay. I mean, it's a non-paying position.
Oh, it's unpaid. Yeah.
Yeah.
What happened to Ted Kennedy in this last go around?
Well, as you touched on there in what you read, the way this all works is I'll just state it very briefly. It's actually quite complex, but the way it works is there are committees of comprised mostly of teachers, of educators, who are assigned to write new portions of the guidelines for a particular subject area. And they spend a lot of time doing it. It goes through lots of drafts. But then at this, we're now in the latter stages, the members themselves, the board members themselves, get the document, and they can make changes. So what they do is they'll stand up and just say, I propose this amendment, I propose that amendment, and by a show of hands, they pass it. So just, on their own, they go ahead and change this document that's been created. So there was a question about item a famous Americans of renown that kids should focus on and know about. People like, and the names included Hillary Clinton, Newt Gingrich, quite a few people. And Ted Kennedy was proposed, and he was voted down. So I started with that as a way of saying, this in a way is how history is made. That is to say, how, kids 5 years from now who won't remember Ted Kennedy in person, in life, iced out of the picture a little bit in that sense.
Why? He was, just when you look at it factually, he was the liberal icon of the Senate for a long, long time.
So, there wasn't much discussion. They just said, they just voted up and down and show of hands, and then they moved on to the next item. So it wasn't a long deliberation about it. A couple of members said, hey, said just what you said. He's been a long-standing member of the Senate, and affected a lot of legislation. Presidential candidate, the famous Kennedy family, and so on. But then they just voted him down and moved on.
Oh my goodness! Now, is there? Would it be fair to say that the goal, really, and it gets fairly complicated, and we'll get into some of the complexities. But the goal of many of these conservative members of the school board is to portray the founding fathers of this country as a Christian nation, and to look at the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence, and you go into some legal stuff in the article of how those two can be used in order to talk about bringing God back into the classroom in many ways.
Yeah, that's what I focused on in this article. The agenda is quite broad, and it has in the past, they've gotten a lot of attention. For example, with science books, the effort to water down evolution and either put creationism or intelligent design or language suggesting that language that weakens the theory of evolution into science books. This time it's social studies that are under discussion, and in particular, there were a couple of things. One was social issues generally, and names, who should be, as with Ted Kennedy or people like Thurgood Marshall or Cesar Chavez. Should they be included, and to what extent? The other area, which I really focused on, is religion and this idea of Christian conservatives that America is a Christian nation. And this block on the Texas board has had it in mind to, they would say, not rewrite American history, but rather to reassert the truths of American history that have in the past decades, they would say a secular tide, these truths have been paved over.
Mm-hmm. And tell me about some of the people who sit on this board who are advancing that agenda. Some of these people are not even scholars, right? They're not.
Well, no, they're not
scholars.
Typically, people who are on school boards aren't necessarily educators, or they don't have a PhD in education or in history if they're reviewing history books and so on. But typically, they do not have, what they have kind of an oversight, and then they give it to committees of mostly educators to create the guidelines. And so their role is more kind of the executive role. According to a lot of critics, they shouldn't be in there getting into the nuts and bolts of it and sort of at the last minute rewriting things. Mm-hmm. So that's, that's really the criticism.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about some of the characters involved here. Don, how do you pronounce his last name? McElroy?
Don McElroy is, he was for a time the chairman. He's one of the Christian conservatives, and he was the chairman. And he was last year, he was kind of demoted from the position of chairman by the Texas state legislature because they were really over his religious views. And but he's still, I think, in many ways, the most powerful member of the board. And he's, you know, I spent a lot of time with him, and he's the first to admit he's not an authority in any of these areas. He's a dentist, actually. And but he's also the one who spends the most time poring over the document and then offers more amendments than anyone else.
Is he a good dentist?
You know, that's an excellent question. I don't know. I mean, I should have interviewed some of his patients on that.
Yeah, exactly. You write in the article that Christian activists argue that American history textbooks basically ignore religion to the point they distort history outright, and mainline religious historians tend to agree with them on this.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are ways in which I think most people, most historians, would agree with these conservative Christians about the role of religion. That religion, I mean, as anyone with a passing familiarity with American history would know, religion has had a profound impact on the forming of the country, starting with the Pilgrims and the Puritans, and right through to today. And if you look at typical American history textbooks, you don't really see that reflected. And there are various explanations for why that's the case. Some of the conservatives on the Texas board, for example, would argue that this is kind of there's a secular agenda to kind of whitewash religion and sort of push it out of the picture. Others say that, in fact, it's probably more the case that textbook companies are afraid to get in trouble. And if you know, religion is an area where, you know, however you state something, somebody's going to complain and be upset about. So they tend to try to, avoid it for their own peace of mind.
Mm-hmm. There are certain kinds of documents that are used, and tell me why they are used to support the cause of people like Don. You mentioned in the article the Mayflower Compact, which I'm sure many people won't know very much about, and the other, the Declaration of Independence.
Yeah, well, what they're trying to do, broadly speaking, is make the claim and use documents to support it that America's founding was Christian. And so they will go to selective foundational documents, and one of them being the Mayflower Compact, principally because, not that those things were not important, they were, but the reason they're focusing on certain documents such as those is that they have language in them. When the Pilgrims signed this compact, it included a line, which I don't remember verbatim, but it's to the effect that this enterprise of theirs is for the advancement of the Christian faith. Therefore, if you look at the Pilgrims as kind of the real seeders of the American enterprise, and you see that they saw themselves as advancing something that was for the advancement of the Christian faith, then you begin to develop this kind of argument that, in fact, everything that the country has been about has been for that purpose.
Mm-hmm. Can you update us on the Supreme Court decisions, which you do in the article, which has forbidden public schools from seeking to impress upon students the importance of particular religious values through the curriculum?
Through the curriculum, yeah. I mean, so the Supreme Court has has been quite clear in saying that you can't advance through the curriculum a particular faith. However, you can talk about religion as a subject rather than proselytizing. I mean, I think that's generally understood by educators, by most state boards, for example.
But if you had a state board in Texas that was 9 members Christian conservative out of 15, and they all agreed, and I'm sure that there is a political tie-in here, too, that there was way too much emphasis placed on on evolution instead of intelligent design, that prayer in schools was something that should happen, that how we teach sexuality and what we teach about homosexuality is biblically based, etc. They're pretty close to being on the margin here where it would significantly affect curriculum, wouldn't it?
Well, certainly, because as I said before, the you know, what Texas does, the guidelines that they create tend to get find their way into, as one person I interviewed who's been involved in this for a long time said, 46 or 47 other states.
We are going to welcome phone calls, and we'll take them in just one moment. Our number is 800-486-8655. Russell Shorto is our guest. He is a contributing writer at the New York Times Magazine, and his books include Descartes' Bones, A Skeletal History of the Conflict Between Faith and Reason. The piece that we're talking about, How Christian Were the Founders, appears in the New York Times February 14 magazine. 800-486-8655 is our number. The email address, talk@WPR.org. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We start taking phone calls, and let's go to Sharon first from Duluth. Hi, Sharon. You're on the air.
Hi. It sounds like mainly what we're talking about here is history, you know, in the U.S. And Howard Zinn just recently died. And his book, People's History of the United States, I've just wondered if any schools other than colleges and so forth have ever discussed or considered looking at history at least slightly from that kind of perspective. You know, mainly we look at the major leaders and mostly our wars, but there's a whole lot of our history to be learned. I learned a lot of things I didn't understand how they came to be. You know, some of the laws that had to do with racism and stuff, and so forth. So I just wondered if there's ever been any effort or anyone has ever done anything about showing that side of history. I know it's a big gap between that and what we're the kind of history we're talking about, but it seems real important to include too.
Russell,
I'm here.
Oh, do you want to respond?
Oh, if there was another question there, I missed it.
Yeah, it was mostly just a comment. So, but I would imagine that Howard Zinn is probably not a textbook used in many high school classrooms.
Yeah, I don't think so. But as I say, you know, one of the things that I just, you know, if you're talking about textbooks, you know, I have a lot of friends who are teachers, and they say, okay, you have to use the textbook because you know, statewide testing kind of revolves around it and things like that. But, you know, they'll say maybe they spend 20% of the time with the textbook or something. So, you know, good teachers are going to, you know, use the materials that they think are important.
What about this other theme that you write about, the concept of American exceptionalism, the Christian blog repeatedly emphasizing that Christianity should be portrayed as the driving force behind what makes America great?
Yeah, I mean, you know, American exceptionalism is, this is a kind of basic, you know, almost litmus test between conservatives and liberals, I think, whether or not you think it's appropriate that the view of American history that students get should be one that frankly promotes the idea of American exceptionalism, that says America is a special place. It's the greatest country on the earth, and it is so because of its history. And so it takes that sort of overtly patriotic line. And certainly the conservatives and even the liberals that I talked to on the Texas board were pretty much fine with that notion. And then some of them go further and say that it's the fact that America is undergirded by Christianity that is the reason for this exceptionalism.
Hmm. We have a couple emails, perhaps humorous, perhaps not. Let me read just two of them together.
Okay.
One from Peter, who says, perhaps we should encourage the Texas secessionist movement as a way to ameliorate the problem. And another one from Linda, my daughter is a teacher in Texas. I don't think they should be in charge of anything down there.
Meaning the teachers shouldn't be in charge of it, or what?
Just the people who write textbooks or any kinds of laws, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah. Let's go next to Erin from Woodruff. Hi, Erin.
Hello. Good afternoon, you guys, or good morning still.
Hi.
Basically, I've been following this storyline. I have a lot of friends on Facebook who link to the articles, including your guests. Mm-hmm. And I've been reading it and following it online, and sometimes I feel like I need to get away from the article and come back to it later because it's just so mind-bogglingly frustrating. It's like the movie, if you've ever seen the film Idiocracy,
no,
where 500 years in the future, everybody is stupid. You know, it seems like that's where the world's going. I'm almost 28, and I'm not really big about the idea of having kids, but things like this just make me not want to have children even more. Instead of it being the meek shall inherit the earth, it's more like the stupid will inherit the earth. It's so frustrating. It's like I have friends who are going to school to be teachers, and I have friends who have kids in grade school. And I'm so baffled that more people aren't involved with their school boards or don't get involved politically, because it seems like the people who really are passionate about getting involved are the people who really are determined to shape your world to look like their imaginary world.
That's true. It's true that people who have this strong personal agenda and feel that they need to therefore change the way society thinks, they're driven to do things like stand for school board elections because they know that this is a way to. And when you watch the process, when you watch not just the school board members, but watch the meetings of the school board, there's some cause for optimism in that you see dozens and dozens of people from all walks of life getting up there and giving their two cents and wanting to inject their perspective on things. But I'll say also that the TEKS, the Texas Guidelines, I mean, it's hundreds of pages, and as you read through it, it's very thorough, it's very thoughtful, the perspective on American history, on American government, on economics. So what we're talking about is people who want to take this thing and then shape it in a certain direction. But it should also be said that, you know, there were a lot of people involved in this who were really careful. I talked to a lot of the teachers who were careful and really tried hard to come up with something that, I mean, it does, reading through it, it makes you actually feel kind of hopeful about the future, realizing that this document, this guideline, has been basically in place for more than 10 years, and this is how a lot of Americans, this has shaped the way a lot of children in America have gotten educated.
You talk about it being impressive reading, but there also may be something substantially wrong with the Texas process. What would you recommend?
Well, I think that the process allows for the board members to have the final say. And what's, you know, a lot of critics I talked to said, you know, this process is so good in that it gives a lot of time, and there's a lot of inclusiveness. All different people from all different backgrounds are included in particular in things like social studies, where you of course want the range of the different ethnicities and religions and so on. But then the problem is that the board itself is allowed to sort of short circuit all of this work.
Thanks, Erin, for your call. Let's go to Mike from Prairie du Sac. Hi, Mike.
Yes, the problem with this teaching evolution theory is that they don't go far enough back. When you go all the way back and you say before there was anything, that these Big Bang theory, that there was an explosion that brought all these things together, well, where did the chemicals and things needed?
All right, let's just talk about the teaching of evolution. What has Texas decided in that regard? It's always a contentious issue.
Yeah, what they, a few years ago in the science go-round, they talked about evolution and intelligent design, and there was the phrase which was thought by people who were sort of on the moderate to liberal side thought to be innocuous, where the phrase strengths and weaknesses, so that students were required to learn the strengths and weaknesses of theory of evolution. That then became kind of a wedge in which conservatives were able to sort of push and basically argue that, you see, therefore there are weaknesses in the theory of evolution, as though scientists are all kind of sitting on the fence saying, well, you know, on the one hand here, but on the other hand there, about the theory of evolution. Now, and then in the most recent go-round, they have modified that, but according to more moderate watchers, this has, it still allows for it's still, in effect, a kind of wedge issue.
Mm-hmm. Here's an email from Mike. I had heard recently this problem has been somewhat improved in that textbooks are being published all over, aren't as dependent on Texas as they had been. Is that true?
This, you know, it's hard to get something definitive on this. Mm-hmm. On the one hand, technology is a factor. Because it used to be the case that it's so expensive to produce a textbook, you don't want to produce 50 different editions for 50 different states. So you try to produce one edition, and then you have to appease Texas, so then everybody else has to deal with that. And now it's cheaper, basically, to make different editions. On the other hand, it seems to be the case that since Texas had created this kind of template, and other states basically keep the template. Now, if in the future states start, you know, there's a lot of, it's also the case that there's a lot of anxiety among textbook publishers people I talk to, publishing representatives, wanted to play down this point, saying, no, Texas is, you know, it's not really, that's kind of an urban myth. But other people I talk to who've been involved in this process who don't have that kind of economic stake in it, say that, in fact, Texas still has a large influence on things.
Mm-hmm. Let's go next to Steve from Houston. Hi, Steve.
Good morning. You know, in all fairness, a lot of this is really a backlash against the extreme anti-Christian viewpoint and the radicalization of our textbooks. We moved here from Wisconsin 5 years ago. 14 years ago, my son was in fourth grade, in a conservative small-town school in Greene County, in New Glarus, and he was, they were having a Christian, a Christmas concert. It was a holiday concert. Of course, you can't use the name of Christmas, and he came home and he said, Dad, you're not going to believe what they just said. The music teacher said they were going to sing the song by John Denver, and I kid you not, this is true. I'm not making this up. Thank God I'm a country boy, but because I can't mention the name of God, then they have to sing, Thank Gosh I'm a Country Boy. And I went to that concert, and that's how it was sung. I mean, yeah. You know, it's silly, but it's tragic, because to go back to a more serious point, how can you teach the history of America, the foundation of our Constitution? My ancestors helped build this country, the Declaration of Independence, you know, the Constitution, you know, the prayers of Valley Forge of George Washington, without teaching Christian history. I mean, and with regards to the theory of evolution, it is a theory. It's not a fact. 82% of the people in this country believe in God in one form or another, and yet it's not even being honored. You know, this whole debate is skewed. I want to encourage you to get Newt Gingrich, who's a scholar of American Constitution, on here, and he will. And I believe that he would set a lot of things that your guest has said straight. Because listen for the last half an hour, and this is a completely lopsided discussion. And that's what I want to say.
Oh, I think you need to read Russell's article because
okay,
it's
well,
pretty thorough,
let me
but go ahead.
Let me just respond to a couple of things. First of all, as I think we said sort of at the outset, I think most mainline scholars of religion would agree with the basic point that American history is in a sense, religion, the history of religion in America. And that, and a lot of people agree that has been leached out of the view of history that that students get, and that the John Denver example is a great, funny, ridiculous example. Another one that several people brought up to me when I was researching the story was a textbook that referred to the pilgrims as people who liked to take voyages in ships. You know, this complete end run around their point, which was they were seeking religious freedom, and that is of course absurd. American the Pilgrims and the Puritans, in many ways the Dutch colony of New Netherland. Religion was very basic to all of these things. Rhode Island was founded basically for religious freedom. So all of that is fundamental, and that should be, and I think nearly all the experts who I talked with said that that should be a basic part of the view of history that people get.
Thanks, Steve, for the call. Let's go back to Ted Kennedy for just a moment. We won't be learning about Ted Kennedy in some textbooks. Who else won't we learn about, and who will we learn about more?
Well, there was just in the kind of rundown of names early or several months ago in this process, there was what made some headlines was some efforts to remove Thurgood Marshall and Cesar Chavez from social studies books, and then that got there was a lot of immediate backlash, and so that the conservatives backed down on that. But across, you know, there are, I mean, Don McElroy, for example, did a lot of things that were, I mean, he sort of admitted were, you know, overtly partisan. He put forth an amendment to try to that would have language in the American government book that would vindicate Joseph McCarthy. He has language in there to say that students should study the individuals and organizations from the 70s, 80s, and 90s, like Newt Gingrich, the Contract with America, that were the National Rifle Association, that were, you know, obviously all Christian. Now he would say that he's doing that because there has been an emphasis in the past few decades on liberal organizations. So he would say he's trying to correct that imbalance.
Hmm. Let's go to Bruce from Milwaukee next. Hi, Bruce.
Hello.
Hello.
As the 12th descendant of John and Priscilla Alden, I am always offended by the Christian right's co-opting of the Pilgrims. They have an agenda which has nothing to do with the facts of the Pilgrim settlement, nor with the fact that, while, yes, many of the colonies were settled by religious people seeking religious protection and freedom, the American government did not want to be part of a theocracy. So this notion that the American government is based in Christianity is false.
I think that's a good point, and it's something that we should talk about in this discussion, which is, it is certainly the case that the Puritans and the Pilgrims of the 17th century settlers had religion as a basic part of what they were doing, and you might say that was their motivation to advance Christianity in some extent. And it's certainly true that the Founding Fathers, you know, if you had taken a poll, they would have probably nearly all of them said that they were Christians. But something happened in between the 17th century and the late 18th century, and that was the Enlightenment. And so that what the founders were principally motivated by was this notion, which had started a century before with Descartes and others, that the basis for knowledge and for actions was the human mind and its good sense, as Descartes said, and not received wisdom from the Bible or the church or a monarchy. And that was what motivated them, so that they wanted two things. They wanted to found a country with religious freedom, but they wanted it freedom from religion as well, because they had understood the experience of established churches, of state-sponsored churches in Europe, and in fact in the colonies. Most of the colonies had establishment churches which prevented other faiths from taking root. So there was it's an important difference. You know, religion was part of the whole picture, but something happens between the 17th century when the Pilgrims and Puritans come and the founding of the country, and that is this notion that we have to sort of use our reason to mediate, so we have to find a way to allow religious freedom, but at the same time we have to protect ourselves from the excesses of religion.
Thank you, Bruce, for the call. Here's another email that's come in from Barb. If they want religion taught in school, why not send your kids to parochial school? Or if you want to open that Pandora's box, they need to incorporate all religions in the books. And let me ask sort of a follow-up to that. I don't know if they teach world history, but I'm wondering if there is some concern about the role of religion and how it is taught or not taught in world history textbooks.
Yeah, I mean, world history is part of this as well. And yes, indeed, the difference here is between proselytizing and teaching about history. Everyone, pretty much everyone, thinks that teaching about history is something that ought to be done. I mean, it's teaching about religion, excuse me, is something that ought to be done. But proselytizing is against it's against the law in a public school, and you know that. So the question then is, by doing the sorts of things that some members of the Texas Board of Education are trying to do, are they in effect proselytizing? Are they favoring one type of faith?
Mm-hmm. We need to pause for a moment, and we'll return and take more phone calls. Our guest is Russell Shorto, joining us by phone from Amsterdam, and we're talking about his piece in the February 14 section of the New York Times Magazine. He's also the author of Descartes' Bones, A Skeletal History of the Conflict Between Faith and Reason. Our number, a couple lines are open, 800-486-8655, our email talk at WPR.org, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go back to phone calls now and to Scott from Green Bay. Hi, Scott.
Hi. But that's a difficult subject. I think the way that they do it in Texas is a bit confusing, and I'm just being nice about that. When it comes to religion in the historical context, I don't know if you can really teach it at the high school level. I mean, because I think your guest said about where does it become education, where does it become proselytized, and I think almost in any aspect it would be very difficult. I would hate to be a teacher or be put in that position where I've got to try and teach that subject, because I always think that somebody's going to take offense to it one way or the other. And it'd be really interesting to find out. I know in Germany, in gymnasium, they all take religion. They all have to have religious studies course, even at the high school level in Germany. I'm wondering how they do it over there as compared to over here. I think we need to figure out a way to keep it out of the textbooks in a proselytizing way, but in a historical context, it would be fine. But we do that with everything. I mean, even science now has become an issue. I mean, my son had to watch Al Gore's movie without any background into it at all, and it was taught as, I mean, almost as a religious studies course. It was all factually true. I mean, you know, we seem to be doing this at the high school level to these kids nowadays. It's kind of strange.
Well, I think your point is one that I touched on earlier when I was saying that the one explanation for why there is not much religion in American history books is that publishers tend to say, you know what, that's going to be nothing but trouble. We're just going to get, you know, all of this stuff down our backs, so let's just tend to avoid it. I do think, however, and I've talked with a number of teachers about this, that you can teach it in a way that you're not proselytizing. You teach what who the pilgrims were. I just wrote a review for a book, a new book about the pilgrims, and you know, it looks into who the pilgrims actually were. I mean, the view of the pilgrims, for example, that we get in American history, it's like they were just people who were ostracized, so they came here for freedom. Well, who were they? Who had they been in England? How persecuted were they? What was the relationship between them and the Puritans? How did they fit into that society? You can talk about that. That's historical, and you, in the process of doing that, you're talking about their faith, and then you talk about them planting this colony and what they did there and how they tried to succeed as a colony and with regard to their faith, and you're not forcing that their religion on anyone.
Right. I think it is Martin Marty, who you interviewed for the article, who's talking about or maybe it was just Martin Marty talking about George Washington, who talked about this religious language having to be accessible to all people. And I think about the makeup of today's classrooms in many places in this country, and it is really diverse. You got so many different religious or no religious beliefs that I would think that might be an important mission for anybody who's writing textbooks, is to make sure that the religious language is accessible.
Yeah, I mean, the point he was making was that because a lot of the Christian conservatives will pick out quotes by founding fathers talking about faith. But his point was mostly what they did was they tried to pick a broad way. For example, they rarely spoke about our Savior, Jesus Christ. Rather, they would talk about the Creator or nature and nature's law and that sort of thing. They would just talk in these broad notions as a way to be inclusive and not kind of restrict it to one faith group. And your point's a good one, because now you couldn't even say the Creator or a Creator, because there would be people who took offense to that. So that certainly makes it tricky for textbook writers and for teachers.
Thanks, Scott, very much for the call. We go to Philip next, somewhere on I-94. Hello, Philip.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine, Philip. How are you?
Good.
Good.
My question relates to something I was thinking about as I've been listening, which is that it seems to me that maybe a portion of the problem here is that there's certainly different information about different parts of American history, and there's just not enough time in the day, I guess, to cover all of it. And so I think some groups probably say, well, if you talk about that, then you should talk about this. Or, you know, if you cover the religious nature of the pilgrims, then you should also cover the more non-religious nature of the actual founding of the government. I guess what I'm wondering is, throughout all these discussions with the Texas Board and other parties, are they talking about how long the school day is, or how large or small the classroom sizes are, in terms of the amount of attention that could be given to any number of topics, and how that plays into what gets chosen and what doesn't.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And the frustration of teachers who I talked to, and teachers who were on the committees that were drawing up the guidelines, was they were saying, "Look, these are supposed to be guidelines. They're not supposed to. We shouldn't be trying to include every single item that a teacher should cover in the course of every school day. I mean, you can't do that." Whereas what the complaint is that a lot of what the board members were trying to do was to, let's get this point in there, let's get this battle in there, let's get this this general, this bishop, this, so you're naming names and dates, and that's not really what's appropriate at this level of the process. And I think the basic point, which you hear from teachers, is teachers have to be given some latitude to teach. It's pedagogically, it's good and necessary to have an overall guideline, and it should be a smart document. But then you have to say, this individual teacher has a right to make use of the training that he or she has, education happens, I think, one person teaching a group of students, and the students, if it works, then the students are getting that something is happening in that interaction, and these kinds of guidelines, a textbook is useful, is maybe a backbone, but it shouldn't try to do the whole job.
Here's an email from John from Madison. Do you know if Ignite Learning Incorporated, Neil Bush, Barbara Bush Enterprise, is behind the push to rewrite history?
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of groups that are involved, and a lot of this, a lot of what we're talking about here has been going on for a long time in Christian schools and in homeschool, the homeschool movement. The whole idea of America as a Christian nation, and that the founders were Christians, and that they, and what we haven't even touched on really is the deep-seated point behind this is that if you can lay the groundwork that America was founded as a Christian nation, that the Declaration and the Constitution have that behind them, then the next step is that links to the social agenda of Christian conservatives today. It reinforces their points about gay marriage, abortion, and so on. And a lot of that has been commonplace in Christian education. And what we're seeing now, especially with Texas, is this effort to move that thinking outward into public education.
Mm-hmm. And there's this legal link, too, that you write about Liberty University, Falwell's University, mm-hmm. and you interview, and there are Texas links to that as well.
Yeah, what I did is one of the members of the Texas School Board, Cynthia Dunbar, is a professor, assistant professor, visiting professor, I think, at Liberty University in the law school. And I sat in on a lecture of hers where she was lecturing third-year law students on how to take the founding documents, how to argue first that the Declaration and the Constitution are legally linked. And the importance of that is that the Declaration mentions a creator. So therefore you are linking it to faith. And then if you link that to the Constitution, then you're beginning to do what I was saying a moment ago and providing a legal basis for then arguing whatever you want to argue about, the questions of the day, prayer in schools and so forth.
Are these conservative members pretty much shoo-ins for re-election, or are there problems with the waning of the conservative movement?
Well, this the primary is going to be on March 2nd, and Don McElroy is up for re-election, and he's facing he's facing a very stiff opponent named Thomas Ratliff, who is billing himself as a moderate Republican, who has a lot of backing among moderates in the state, and both of them told me that basically Ratliff is outdrawing him in terms of financial support by about 10-1. On the other hand, McElroy makes the point, which is a very good one, that it's the Christian conservatives who tend to come out for a school board primary election. So remains to be seen what will happen. Cynthia Dunbar just announced a couple of months ago that she's not going to run for re-election. Another member, Ken Mercer, who's one of the Christian conservatives, is apparently facing some stiff opposition as well. So we could be looking at a realignment of the school board. On the other hand, what they're doing now, this in May, ultimately they'll vote, and that will then kind of lock in, after they vote, that locks in the guidelines, and then the textbook publishers begin writing their textbooks based on that. So, the next school board members will take their seats after this has happened.
We go to Marty from Milwaukee. Hello, Marty.
Oh, good afternoon. Morning. I tuned in late, but the whole premise of textbook publishers being held under the thumb of the Texas School Board sounds like an idea that needs to be examined. Are these the Agnews like Nixon used as a lightning rod for the industry to say that, we're under their thumb? Are they a big enough market? Or is it possible to pull an end run around them using printing technology? This is long press run. So once you set up, you better, do a lot.
Yeah, some of that we've covered. I mean, Texas has a lot of influence over other states for a number of reasons. And it is also true that changes in technology will probably, as time goes by, lessen that influence. So it's what's going on in Texas is important now because it's going to lock in essentially what happens in American history textbooks for the next decade.
Well, you wonder what a better way to do all of this would be. Somehow I'm uncomfortable with people who are, not that they don't know anything about history, but people whose primary concern is fixing people's teeth, deciding what history is going to be. It would seem to me historians have different political perspectives, but wouldn't you rather have a group of great historians deciding what history is important?
Well, I think the argument is that, if the process is it's you have educators, and the way this process works is that there are these teams of educators who are writing the guidelines with the advice of a group of so-called experts that were picked by the board members. And you might say that that's a pretty good process, and then you have these board members who are lay members of the community who are overseeing the whole process. But then, what the critics say is that here in Texas, what's going on is, by law, these board members, who themselves, by and large, don't have training in this, are allowed to trump the whole process that they are overseeing.
Right. Well, they also are selecting the people who are writing texts, right? And so whatever their political position is or their political persuasion is going to find its way just naturally because they're selecting those people to do the writing.
They're selecting the, actually, I don't know that they handpick all of the team, all the people on the writing teams. They certainly picked the experts that advise the writing teams.
Yeah. Well, it's a fascinating story, isn't it? Yeah. And we thank you, Russell, so much for being with us this hour.
Thank you very much, Kim.
Mm-hmm. Russell Shorto, who's just landed in Amsterdam from New York, he is an author, a contributing writer to the New York Times Magazine, and his piece, let me get the correct title, appeared on February 14th, How Christian Were the Founders, which takes a very, very thorough look at how the Texas School Board makes decisions about history and who's on the board and the influence of Christian conservatives and links to law schools. And it's a fascinating and very, very thorough article. Russell is also the author of Descartes' Bones, A Skeletal History of the Conflict Between Faith and Reason. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this program, Chrissy Pease for on-air production in our studios in Milwaukee, and thanks everybody for all of your calls. We'll be with you again tomorrow, same time at 9 o'clock, and have great conversations. We're also on Facebook if you want to go to the Kathleen Dunn Show on Facebook and continue the conversation, make some comments. I'm really into Facebook these days, so that's kind of fun. Until tomorrow, this is the Ideas Network.